Welcome to All with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson, sitting in for Ann today. Penn National, the huge Pittsburgh-based gambling company, owns two large pieces of land in Columbus, and it's working to develop both of them. One is in the Arena District, just a short distance away from Huntington Park and Nationwide Arena. The other, a much larger site, is on West Broad Street. It's the location of the closed Delphi Auto Parts plant. Penn National plans to build a casino on one of those two sites. It says it prefers the West Side site, and that's where Ohio voters come in. They have to okay the location by approving State Issue 2 on the May ballot, which would change the constitutional amendment that voters approved back in November. To talk about this issue, too, we are joined by Mike Curtin. He is the retired associate publisher with the Columbus Dispatch and now chairman of the campaign Stand Up Columbus, the group pushing for the casino move. Mike Curtin, you're once a great reporter. I assume you still write pretty well. If you were writing the story of the past 6 months, what would your lead be?
Change.
Change in what sense?
Well, change in terms of exploring the art of the possible, given passage of State Issue 3 last November, when Ohioans decided to change history by 53-47 vote and make Ohio a casino state after, you know, many, many years of trying by various, you know, casino companies. And the reality in central Ohio was different from the rest of the state in that it passed 53-47 statewide, but it lost in the seven-county central Ohio region by 42-58. Mm-hmm. It carried handily in the other three cities and counties where casinos will be located in Cleveland, Cuyahoga County, Cincinnati, Hamilton County, and Toledo, Lucas County. So the day after the election, it was pretty much a non-issue in those three cities, but it was still an issue here because in the wake of passage statewide, but an overwhelming defeat in central Ohio, the logical question civically and politically was, is there anything we can do? Mm-hmm. And that began the discussion about, can we make change if we don't like the location? And clearly, a lot of central Ohioans did not. You know, could we engage Penn National in a civic discussion to talk about possible change? And fortunately, Penn National was open to such discussion, and so here we are.
So from your perspective, it's basically you're at the lesser of two evils right now.
Well, if you're asking me personally, mm-hmm. You know, I voted against Issue 3, and I voted against the four previous casino issues going back to 1990. So personally, you know, I'm not a big believer in casinos in the heartland. I'm not against casinos per se. I think they have their place. But, you know, I'm not a big fan of casinos in the heartland or in our city. But we live in a democracy, and the voters of Ohio said yes. The Ohio Constitution now has a place for a casino in Columbus. And so I'm a realist and a pragmatist. And at that point, the issue became, okay, Ohioans said we're going to have casinos, including one in Columbus. Can we at least talk about whether we have to accept the November 3rd verdict as is, or whether we can change it. Mm-hmm. So change is the operative word. Penn National, fortunately, was willing to engage the community in the talk about a potential change. And so here we are. And clearly, mm-hmm. Central Ohio is embracing this change. I don't know how the rest of the state will vote come May 4th, but I'm reasonably confident we're going to get a big vote out of Franklin County in favor of Issue 2.
Why not? Because there were other options suggested back when this – after it passed in November. There was the opt-out option to allow Columbus to opt out of the state constitution. That would also require voter approval. There was also just trying to reverse the whole thing, try to get – convince voters from around the state to just say no to gambling. And they've said no several times in the past. Why go for – I guess the easiest of these options and just changing the site and not trying to eliminate casino gambling in Columbus or eliminate it statewide?
Well, you have to read the political landscape for what it is. And a lot of smart people spent a month to a month and a half after November 3rd of last year reading the political landscape. And to attempt to keep a casino out of Columbus altogether was a much, much higher hill, no question about it, mm-hmm. than engaging in an exercise that would be an address change. So Would it be possible to keep a casino out of Columbus altogether? It might be, but it would be a much, much more difficult exercise politically and legally.
And financially with Penn National, I assume they would have fought you on this one.
Sure. I mean, you would have had an enormous fight politically and most likely a very long and expensive legal fight whose outcome would have been very uncertain. I don't think anybody could have clearly predicted what a legal fight would result in and what those legal arguments would end up being. So in the real world, I mean, politics is the art of compromise. And I think the sanest heads prevailed. Folks got together. A whole lot of people all across Columbus and Central Ohio got together and looked at this issue. And Democrats, Republicans, business, labor, all sorts of people, you know, came up with a proposed solution of an address change. And it wouldn't have worked if there weren't neighborhoods in Columbus that didn't want the casino. But clearly, two neighborhoods stood up very tall and said, we want it. The far south side down around Cider Downs said that through their civic and business associations and through their elected officials. And the same thing occurred on the far west side.
After a little bit of consternation, the trustees said no at first, but then they changed.
Well, that was all about – that wasn't all about not having the casino.
It was
that
a deal
was about,
with the city.
That was all about how the revenue is going to flow and are we going to have annexation. Mm-hmm. That wasn't anti-casino sentiment. That was all about dividing the economic pie from the casino. But all the civic and business associations that weighed in on the far west side weighed in favor of this relocation to the far west side. Had that not occurred, we wouldn't be here. Mm-hmm. With State Issue 2. But they did stand up. They said we wanted it, and so here we are.
Let's bring in another voice here, Chuck Hootman. He's the founder of the group Casino Free Columbus. Casino Free Columbus opposes casino gambling in Columbus, but they are remaining neutral on this issue of whether or not to move the casino from the Arena District to the west side. Chuck, when the voters in Columbus, let's round it up to 60-40.
Sure. 60-40
voted against a casino. The casino amendment. Were they voting against the Arena District casino, or were they voting against casinos in general?
I think, given the people that I've talked to, weren't largely aware of the location of the casino. Most of them were just generally opposed to having a casino in Columbus, that they feel that they've worked hard for this community to create an identity that goes beyond doing what everyone else is trying to do to make money in tough economic times. And the greatest way to make money in these times is not to do what everybody else is doing and trying to legalize convenience casinos in their community to suck money out of their community, but to innovate, force their politicians to be more innovative in creating solutions to get us out of these tough economic conditions. I mean, the casino is really, really lazy way of going about this.
So why not – why neutral in this fight? What's your thinking there?
Sure. We thought long and hard about this issue. You know, when we started Casino Free Columbus, we knew it would be a very interesting fight at the Arena District. We had the Dispatch on our side. We had Mayor Coleman on our side, Nationwide, basically the whole city trying to fight the casino. And then based on a lot of our objectives, you know, enter Stand Up Columbus. And I should say that Mike Curtin and I are friends. And I have a lot of respect for him. And his position over at the Dispatch. However, I could not endorse Issue 2. I largely feel that it's trying to move a casino over to a poorer neighborhood, and I feel that the casino in the west side will just only seek to exacerbate the problems that already exist over there. So endorsing Issue 2 or opposing it would be a vote for a casino in some location either way. And if being Casino Free Columbus, we're against all casinos. So our stance is we will fight this casino. We will hold Penn National's feet to the fire no matter the location.
292-8513, if you'd like to join our conversation. We're talking about the issue number 2 on the May ballot, the issue that would move the planned casino from the Arena District in downtown Columbus to the west side on West Broad Street, the site of the former Delphi Auto Plant, which was being demolished this week. Probably is being demolished as we speak right now. Mike, it's a double-edged sword, would you admit, for the west side. It brings economic development to that side of the city. But there's also a danger in that, you know, it's a relatively low-income neighborhood, and perhaps they are the most vulnerable to problem gambling. Would you agree that it's a double-edged sword?
I don't know demographically and socially, you know, what types of individuals are more prone to compulsive gambling than others. I don't have any expertise in that regard, Mike, so I can't tell you whether location, you know, drives more susceptibility to problem gambling for one class of people as opposed to another class. I can't weigh in because I don't know. Mm-hmm. All I know is that by a very strong majority, the folks who are elected to represent people out there in the various civic associations, the elected officials who represent that area, the business associations who represent the businesses, all said, we think this is an economic catalyst. We want it out here. So I'm not going to supersede my judgment for theirs. The reason that the GM Delphi plant is on the ballot is because the folks out there said we want it. Now, should issue 2 pass and Penn National gets the green light to develop that site on the 123 acres out there, I'm not an expert in this either, but I presume that casinos can be built in any number of different ways. They're not all created equal. They're not all built the same. I believe that there is a strong sentiment on the far west side that once issue 2 passes, to engage Penn National in a discussion about how do you build a casino campus out there that energizes the community as much as possible, that creates synergies up and down West Broad Street so that you spread the wealth, if you will, and you can make an economic catalyst work up and down the avenue, you know, as opposed to just being overly self-contained.
Are you confident that Penn National can do that? Because the basic theory of a casino is similar to that of a shopping mall. You try to keep your folks inside because if they stay inside, they'll gamble more and you'll make more money. Can a casino really help other businesses along West Broad Street?
Well, most of the businesses out there think so. Uh-huh. I don't know. That is the hope. And I know that there are a lot of people in the business world and the political world who hope to engage Penn National in a discussion about how one does that. And for whatever it's worth, I would hope to be part of those discussions as well.
Chuck, you want to weigh in on if this is a good fit for the West Side?
I don't believe casinos have a place. There is a good fit for a casino in Ohio, Central Ohio, for that matter. I attended the meeting out on the West Side, and we've had members of Casino Free Columbus attend town hall meetings on the West Side. And the sentiment over there, just to sum up, is largely the residents don't want the casino. The business owners do. The meeting we had at the Spears Funeral Home in the Snow, I think back in December, the residents voted in majority by a show of hands at the meeting that were actually opposed to locating a casino in their neighborhood. Their elected officials went against that vote to say that they would write a letter of recommendation to the mayor welcoming the casino to the West Side. So I think if you ask the majority of the residents over there, they don't want the casino. I think that's ultimately who should be deciding on it, not business owners, people that think they are going to gain economically from this that won't.
Is there a split there, Mike, between the business leaders and the average folks on the street on the West Side?
I don't know that to be the case. Obviously, we'll know certainty the day after the election.
Yeah, we can look at the precinct totals and ward totals.
We look precinct by precinct, ward by ward. I would differ with Chuck on that. My political sense is that there'll be a strong vote and precincts and wards out there in favor of issue 2. If that's not correct, then obviously I'll stand corrected. But my sense is, from my meanderings around town, is that there'll be a very strong vote for issue 2 out there.
Okay. We're talking about issue 2, the vote in May to move the casino from the Arena District to the West Side. We'll continue our conversation and head to the phones when we return on All Sides on WOSU 820 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, King of Swing Fiddle, Johnny Gimble. At the age of 83, he's still swinging and playing. He joins up with Vince Gill, Merle Haggard, Willie Nelson, and others on his new CD, Celebrating with Friends. Join us.
and Fresh Air will be here at noon right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Good morning. I'm Amy Jurevich. Thanks for joining us for All Sides today. 51 degrees in downtown Columbus with some light rain, cloudy skies, and a chance of rain for a few more hours, a high of 55, mostly cloudy tonight, a chance of rain showers tonight, and cooler with a low of 35 degrees tonight. Sunshine for Friday and a high of 53. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. Our guest, Mike Curtin, retired Dispatch Associate Publisher and chairman of the campaign Stand Up Columbus. That's the group that is campaigning to move the plan. Columbus Casino from the Arena District to the west side of Columbus. Also, Chuck Hootman, he is founder of the group Casino Free Columbus, who opposes casino gambling in central Ohio. Let's go to the phones. Hello, Ed. You're on the air talking about gambling. Ed is not on the air. we are having issues with the phones, and until we get them straightened out, we'll just chat ourselves. How's that? Mike, there are many who feel that this was What drove this was Nationwide Realty Trust, and to a lesser degree, the Dispatch, that didn't want a casino in their backyard, and that's why they really tried – that's why they first opposed the amendment and then subsequently tried to move it to the west side. How do you respond to that?
What drove it was not Nationwide or Dispatch or any other entity. What drove it was a 42-58 result. Mm-hmm. Last November. If we had a much more ambiguous result, say a 48-52 or 49-51, we would not be sitting here. But when you get a 42-58 verdict, I mean, that's a landslide by any definition. The textbook definition of a landslide is anything over 55-45. So you had a landslide no, and that gave you the basis upon which to make the judgment that Central Islanders don't want it.
But did they vote against the Arena District location, or did they vote against casinos in general?
That's a great question, and I think Chuck is right to a certain extent. A lot of voters did not know that Issue 3 was site-specific. Certainly a lot of Central Ohioans did not know that the 560 West Nationwide Boulevard parcel was written into the Constitution. Mm-hmm. Some did, some didn't. I've not seen any definitive research to show how many voters were aware or not. But was Nationwide among the folks and Dispatch among the folks who didn't like the result of Issue 3? Absolutely. But the political class throughout Central Ohio, Republicans, Democrats, anybody you talk to, will tell you that people far and wide didn't like the verdict last November. And so the business leadership was clearly part of that, but it wasn't the only element, and it had it been the only element, we wouldn't have been successful in getting Issue 2 on the ballot.
Chuck, do you think it would have passed if the location was the west side or the south side in Columbus?
I don't believe so. I don't believe so at all. I think the community here, as I stated before, was opposed to casino gambling. Me personally, I just knew I was going to vote against it. People had asked where was Casino Free Columbus before the issue passed. And, you know, what you do with that situation before the election is you talk to all your friends and you kind of gauge the sentiment. The Dispatch was against it. You're like, this has always failed before. It's not going to pass. And then after it passes, you're kind of like, whoa, you have mm-hmm. to wake up. I do want to thank the Dispatch initially for their opposition and really help, you know, cement that vote in Central Ohio. They were the only major paper in Ohio that wasn't bought out by Penn National Gaming. They made donations to the Blade, the Plain Dealer, and the Cincinnati Enquirer. So they were vehemently opposed to it. I am a little disappointed now that we can't work together to stop casino gambling altogether. I think we would have had a really, really challenging, interesting, successful fight in the Arena District. But I think there's a lot of room for common ground in the future.
Looking at – because this issue really does – do we want to move it from the Arena District or the west side? We've talked about the benefit, potential benefits to the west side. You know, business leaders see this as an economic engine to an area that really needs it. I mean, look at that Delphi plant before it was being torn down. Even now you can see that something had to go there, and perhaps anything there will help. But the Arena District is an entertainment area. Isn't that a better fit for an entertainment – a casino gambling entertainment venue than outside of the Arena District? I mean, like,
I would raise two issues, Mike. One is the specific location. And if you've walked the site or driven by the site and familiarized yourself with it, mm-hmm. it's an 18.3-acre site at the west end of Nationwide Boulevard. It's a dead end, mm-hmm. inaccessible from three directions. You can't get there from the west, north, or east. You can only get there from the south via Nationwide Boulevard and Hocking Street. And Penn National projects 10,000 visitors a day to this casino. The traffic issues alone along an insufficient arterial system now is enough to scare you to death if you're an Arena District resident or just anybody who drives that area on a regular basis.
Didn't Penn National take that into account when they...
No, I don't think they did. Mm-hmm. I think their selection of 560 West Nationwide Boulevard was an 11th hour decision. Made without a whole lot of due diligence. That's my personal opinion. They could answer more definitively how much investigation went into that. So that's one.
Yep.
Secondly, you have a robust and vibrant residential community growing in the Arena District. The Buggy Works, the North Bank condos, Burnham Square, the apartment and condo development scene there is very robust, growing month by month. You don't have that at the Delphi site. You don't have any nearby residential out there. It's a long stone's throw away before you get to any residential. And I think you have to take into keen account what nearby residential folks believe. And so I think both traffic and residential concerns make that site a bad fit.
I won't give the phone number because our phones are balky. So if you want to have a question for our guests or a comment to make, please email us at allsides@wosu.org. We also have a Facebook page, All Sides with Ann Fisher on Facebook. We'll take your comments and questions via there as well. One argument I've heard about the Arena District, you know, 10 years down the road, if the casino does go to the west side, that the Arena District may actually regret the decision not to embrace it, because you've got to figure the entertainment dollars – there are only so many of them. A large market for a casino likely will be the convention business that comes into town. Chuck, is there a chance that they could siphon off business from the Arena District, entertainment dollars from the Arena District down to the west side?
I mean, there's always a chance of, you know, if people are – depends on what type of people, entertainment people are looking for. You know, I don't really buy the argument that the Arena District is a family-friendly district. It is sometimes, but it you know, there are bars and there are baseball games. So, I mean, that's Americana. I don't think the Arena District will ever regret getting rid of the casino. Like I said, the thing with Columbus is that I want to hold this town to a higher standard. And they talk about, well, we have to have a bigger convention center and we have to have casino gambling. You have to offer everything to everybody. And it's not the smart way to market the city to attract a different, smarter, educated crowd to town that has more money to spend in local independent businesses that go back to creating jobs, sustainable jobs for our community.
Mike, any chance that this could hurt the Arena District in the long run, do you think?
No, I don't think so.
No? They won't take away folks' business convention, hotel visitors, things like that? Because it's a bigger site down there, and Penn National has hinted they can build a hotel here, which they had promised not to do down at the Arena District.
I don't think folks are losing sleep over that question.
allsides@wosu.org is the email address to get in touch with our guests here as we talk about issue two, moving the casino from the Arena District to the west side. One of the more fascinating, aside from the issue of should it move, should it be here, is this whole campaign. Most political observers we've talked to say they've never seen anything like this. They don't quite know what to expect. So let's talk politics here a little bit. Stand Up Columbus. Let's first, Mike, who's funding the Stand Up Columbus campaign? How are you getting your word out? Who's paying for your ads that you plan to run or administrative things and things like that?
I think as we hear, Mike, Stand Up Columbus has something on the order of between 60 and 75 individual donors. Those donors do include nationwide Realty Investors, includes Wolf Enterprises, mm-hmm. includes American Electric Power, includes any number of other businesses, law firms, and quite a few individuals. It's a growing list, you know, day by day. I think by the time campaign expense reports are filed in late April, There'll be between 100 and 200 individual contributors, hopefully, to Stand Up Columbus.
Penn National on that list?
Penn National is contributing to the campaign, but through its own entity, not through Stand Up Columbus.
Okay. So they are helping peripherally to perhaps run ads and things like that, fund ads or outreach and phone banks and things like that.
Yeah, as you know from your own fundraising here, I mean, you know, it's a never-ending enterprise. You do it day by day. But I think when the campaign finance reports are filed, you'll see that Penn National is well-represented, as will be the leading businesses throughout Central Ohio, and a surprising number of individuals who simply care about getting the right location for this thing.
$50 million, give or take, was spent on the November campaign. We're not looking at that kind of spending for this. What kind of budget are you looking at? How much do you think you'll spend on this campaign to get this passed?
Well, you're correct. Far, far from that. Well, as you also know from your own fundraising here, it's one thing to receive pledges. Mm-hmm. It's another thing to get the check in the mail. And so we've been aggressively soliciting.
We take credit cards. That works pretty well.
We've been aggressively soliciting pledges. We've mm-hmm. done well getting lots of pledges throughout the community. And now we're in the hard daily slog of getting these pledges fulfilled.
Mugs? Have you given away mugs? Have you tried that?
We might try mugs. I appreciate the suggestion. So I think we'll be probably in the low single digits, in terms of millions. It would be wonderful to have $4 million plus, but we're not there yet. We're working on it.
It helps that you really don't have organized opposition. There's no outside that we know of, no outside gambling company. That's what drives up these costs of these campaigns, to have outside gambling companies fighting you. Mm-hmm. No one's fighting you right now. From an organized standpoint.
We have not seen moneyed opposition, mm-hmm. and we haven't seen any extensive organized opposition. Anytime you put the word casino on an amendment, I think in the state of Ohio, you're going to get at least 35% no, mm-hmm. just because of the word casino. But we haven't seen yet any extensive or organized opposition around the state.
What's your strategy? I mean, it really only affects Central Ohio. You know, tangentially, it does affect the rest of the state as far as income the state stands to receive and that kind of things. But how do you convince a voter in Cleveland or Cincinnati or even Youngstown to say, we'll support this, we'll allow Columbus to move their casino?
Well, if you recall State Issue 3 that passed last November, which is in place, and nothing about Issue 3 changes other than the location mm-hmm. of the Columbus Casino if Issue 2 passes this May, the amendment was structured to share the casino revenues from these four casinos statewide. All 88 counties get a share of the casino taxes on a proportionate basis. 51% of casino tax revenues are shared among all 88 counties, 34% of them are shared among all public school districts in the state. 5% of the revenues are shared among the 8 big cities in the state, and so on. And all the rest of the taxes that apply are shared across the state. So every county and every school district in the state has an economic interest in there being four operating casinos as opposed to three, because therefore they get 4/4 of their share as opposed to 3/4 of their share.
But even if theoretically, even if Issue 2 fails, they still have that fourth casino, just be in the Arena District.
Well, that's an open question.
Theoretically.
May or may not be in the Arena District.
We'll get to that one in a moment. Chuck, 58% voted against the casino in November. Why wouldn't 58% vote against it now?
I think there's a sentiment that a lot of people have kind of given up, and they do see that this is a better solution. I think they're largely misinformed. I also think people will turn out to vote for it. You have our Central Ohio newspaper, the Columbus Dispatch, as Mike is representing here, I guess is now partnered up with Penn National to get it moved to the west side. So they're using that engine. I'm sure they've partnered up with other papers in the state just to push that to their local electorate to get it moved.
And political leaders, Mike Coleman, Dewey Stokes, are all
supporting
this as well. Yeah. And that organizationally probably helps as well. Mike, what happens if Issue 2 fails and the Arena District site still is the constitutionally mandated site for a casino?
I think, Mike, that's like asking a football or basketball coach before the big game, what are you going to do if you lose?
Uh-huh.
We don't plan to lose. We plan to win. And if we're unsuccessful, we'll have to deal with that the day after the election. But there's not enough time or energy to focus on losing. You win these things by focusing on winning, and that's what we're doing.
But your opposition to that site would still stand, though, I would assume. And these entities, these nationwide AEPs of the world would still – you could anticipate a fight.
I mean, I'm one guy. Uh-huh. I'd have a personal opinion. I can't speak for what anybody else the day after the election would feel like or want to do should issue two fail. I don't think people in Central Ohio are thinking about issue two failing. Maybe some folks in some other parts of the state are, but I don't think anybody in Central Ohio is hoping it fails. My good friend Chuck may.
Uh-huh. No, like I said, we are indifferent. We will fight this no matter where Penn National wants to put this.
Penn National has thought about it. That's why they have two sites in town. They have the Arena District site, and they've done some work on that since even since this deal was made. They took ownership of it after this deal was made. Is there a gentleman's agreement with Penn National saying, look, if this fails, we'll do our best. Penn National's on board. We'll do our best to move this to the west side. Is there a gentleman's agreement to say, okay, if it fails, you let us build on the Arena District?
I don't know of any gentleman's agreement. I mean, this is a big, messy democracy, Mike, and I think that, you know, there are tens of thousands of people who are going to cast ballots in this election in Franklin County, and I think there's tens of thousands of opinions about what should happen, you know, the day after the election if this thing doesn't pass. So I think, God forbid, if this thing goes down, that the day after the election, there's a long discussion, mm-hmm. a very diverse discussion that's taking place all over the, you know, and everybody has an opinion.
Mm-hmm. Chuck?
Well, I think they would be foolish to go into a gentleman's agreement with a company like Penn National, who hasn't shown any goodwill as far as honoring any of their past comments. This is a company that had advertised 34,000 jobs during the campaign. As we know, they say that each casino will create 3,000 construction jobs and 2,500 permanent jobs. It doesn't add up to 34,000. When I questioned Penn National about that, they said that's because of the ancillary jobs that will be created around casinos. When everyone knows that casinos take jobs out of the community, that one slot machine, it takes three jobs out of the community. So, and this is also a company that is trying to get a 24-hour liquor license, a liquor license that no other member of the community in Ohio can get, that they want to have to increase their political power, their ability to take money out of our community. This is a Trojan horse. These guys haven't honored any of their comments before. They will eventually try and lift the smoking ban because it's in their best interest to do so. They aren't looking out for our best interest. They're only looking out for theirs.
Okay, just a couple minutes left here. Mike, the Arena District, if issue two passes and the casino moves to the west side, any agreements out there that somebody will take this site off of Penn National's hands, because they're not going to want it after it passes, if it passes in May?
I'm not aware of any deals or any gentleman's agreement on any aspect of any of this, Mike. I take Penn National executives' word at face value, and both Tim Wilmot, their chief operating officer, and Eric Shippers, their senior vice president at the Columbus Metropolitan Club, stated that if issue two passes, then a big for sale sign goes up in front of 560 West Nationwide Boulevard. I take that statement at face value.
Okay. Voters will have their say first Tuesday in May. Thanks, Mike Curtin,
former
associate publisher at the Dispatch and chair of the campaign Stand Up Columbus, and Chuck Hoopman, founder of the group Casino Free Columbus. We'll see how it all turns out.
Thanks.
It'll be interesting to watch. All Sides continues, and when we come back, we'll stay in the Arena District, but we'll talk about the return of baseball to Huntington Park with Columbus Clippers general manager Ken Schnocke. That's when All Sides continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, King of the Swing Fiddle, Johnny Gimble. At the age of 83, he's still swinging and playing. He joins up with Vince Gill, Merle Haggard, Willie Nelson, and others on his new CD, Celebrating with Friends. Join us.
Fresh Air begins in just about 20 minutes. It starts at noon right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. 51 degrees in downtown Columbus. Cloudy skies today. A chance of some rain, a high of 55. Clouds tonight and a chance of rain showers overnight as well. Much cooler, a low of 35 degrees. Some sunshine for Friday and a high of 53 for tomorrow.
Support for WOSU today comes from Columbus Threshold Choir, women singing at the bedsides of people who are sick or dying. They use their voices as a vehicle for compassion and comfort. More information is available at thresholdchoir.org.
All Sides continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't care if I never get back. Let me root.
Welcome back to All Sides on WOSU 820. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann Fisher. Well, you thought it would never come as you dealt with the 2 feet of snow that fell in February. You thought it would never come. Baseball season is here, though, and the Reds and Indians both started playing this week. And tonight, the Columbus Clippers open up their 2010 season, their second season. And we can still call it the brand new Huntington Park in the Arena District. To talk about the upcoming season in year number two in the new ballpark, we welcome Ken Schnocke, general manager for the Columbus Clippers. Ken, welcome to All Sides on WOSU.
Thank you, and good morning, Mike.
Good morning. Last year was the real opening day, the first opening day at the new park. I take it it's a little calmer down there this year, even though it is opening day?
Yeah, you know, there's always jitters around opening day. In fact, people... This is my 34th one here in Columbus, and they'll go, haven't you mastered this by now? But, you know, things are always different. I mean, look at the winter we came off of, 40 inches of snow in February. We had 17 inches of snow sitting on the field for most of the month and actually had some snow mold we had to deal with. But, yeah, overall, a lot calmer than a year ago. The only thing I'm missing is the weather was a little nicer a year ago than it is today. But I hear everyone promising me that this bad weather is going to be out of here between noon and 1, and a little dreary tonight, but we should be dry and we should be ready to go.
Yeah, I mean, we've been very fortunate. I mean, baseball fans in other cities so far, we've had summer-like weather. I was watching a game in Boston last night, and it was like 91 degrees for the first week of April in Boston.
That is amazing.
Last year, 667,000 fans attended games at Huntington Park, best attendance in the minors. The park got rave reviews, named the best new ballpark in America, even beating out the new Yankee Stadium. Perhaps the honeymoon is over. How do you keep this momentum?
Well, I don't think the honeymoon is over at all. I mean, I think there's still momentum there. I still think there's a lot of buzz around town. But, you know, when you get into a season, the most important thing is the weather. And two, the second most important thing is over the course of the year to have a competitive team. So, you know, we had some real issues last year that really started with the tough season our parent club, the Cleveland Indians, had. And when that happens, the AAA team suffers because of that. So, you know, I'm hoping the Indians will be a lot more stable this year, a lot less injuries. That will allow us to be more stable. And not only do we still consider Huntington Park to be new, but the affiliation with the Indians is still new. And we did notice over the course of last year how much more in tune the fans were with the players. And now we already have names like Michael Brantley and Matt LaPorta that played most of the year last year at Columbus, now up with the Tribe in Cleveland. And now this year, you know, there's a buzz about Carlos Santana, the catcher. And we went out and got Shelly Duncan, who played for the Clippers at the Coop as part of the Yankees and is now with us now, coming off an MVP season last year with Scranton Wilkes-Barre. And he's going to turn out to be a crowd favorite, similar to Marshall Brant many, many years ago.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Ken Schnocke, general manager for the Columbus Clippers. The Clippers open their 2010 season tonight at Huntington Park in downtown Columbus. If you'd like to email a question to Ken, please send it to allsides@wosu.org. Ken, that's kind of the conundrum you face as a general manager of a AAA affiliate, the one step below the majors. You have really very limited control over the players on your field. The parent club moves them up and down. How do you manage that? How do you keep fan interest in the players themselves?
Well, the first thing is you have to understand what our role is. Our role is, first and foremost, to make sure the Cleveland Indians have 25 healthy bodies. And after that's achieved every morning, then we can go upon our Clipper business for the day. And really, you really have to think about it as just a player getting hurt. It's just that the player maybe gets hurt or injured up in Cleveland, and then we have to send somebody up. I mean, it's really no difference than when Evan Turner got hurt with the basketball Buckeyes, or someone gets hurt with the Crew or the Blue Jackets. It's just that baseball is a little more involved with its farm system and how players move up and down.
Does that, because, fans don't form the multi-year relationships with players that they might in the major leagues, does that make the ballpark a bigger star?
I think the ballpark, is a bigger star. And I think, you're right. There's not that identification necessarily every year like you have with Grady Sizemore up in Cleveland. But I think fans in general are much more in tune with up-and-coming stars than they were a decade or 20 years ago. There's a lot more information that's out on them. A lot more people are in tune with the young people coming up and following the draft picks and everything. So the fans, those that are really into the game and into our affiliation with the Indians, are really more in tune with the players coming out to see them. To all the others, this has just become a great experience, and it's amazing how much the Clippers' image has changed in just the 2 miles that the Crow flies in our location from West Mound Street to the Arena District.
Talking with Ken Schnocke, general manager of the Columbus Clippers, as the Clippers prepare to open their second season in Huntington Park downtown here on All Sides on WOSU 820. You mentioned the new affiliation with the Indians, which I think everyone agrees is, in the long run, the best affiliation. Perhaps you could argue the Reds would be a good fit as well, but because of the geographic proximity and the Indians games being on TV here all the time and the large number of Indians fans, it's a great relationship. But let me ask you a question honestly. Is there a tinge of envy that the Nationals, your former affiliate, that their star, Stephen Strasburg, likely will play at Huntington Park, the phenomenal pitcher?
Well, he might. Syracuse will come here for 4 games, and we might see him, but no, there's no tinge of regret there. I mean, the thing with Washington, as we say it, divorced with the Yankees a few years ago, Washington was our best option at the time, and we used as much marketing genius as we could to try to tie in the nation's capital and the state capital. But I think all the fans, even at that time, realized that was a short-term solution to what they hope would be a long-term association with Cleveland or Cincinnati. So, no qualms about that at all.
It would be nice to see him. Hopefully, he'll be – well, he's not going to be in the minors long from all indications, but apparently it would be nice to see him here at Huntington Park.
I would love to see him.
And you do take advantage. I know when the major league pitchers, major league players from the Indians and from other teams are on stints and things like that, you certainly play that up very – very highly when they come to Huntington Park.
Yes, we do.
Any changes to the ballpark this year that fans can expect to see?
Nothing really for the fans. I mean, we've added a more of a permanent stage in the right field corner where we do the live entertainment every Friday and Saturday night. We actually are going to have a little seating that's elevated that'll just be kind of a new little quirk that we added. I don't know if Mike Curtin's still on the line, but
he's listening. He said he was going to listen.
He's a great baseball guy.
He'll be there tonight, he says.
To tease him and some of the other fans, we actually have put some distance markers on that left field building beyond the left field fence. So I'm sitting here looking. The top of that left field building at the left field foul line is 438 feet from home plate, And those bleacher seats we have up on the AEP Power Pavilion, those are 480 feet from home plate. So I've got some markings that I was teasing Shelly Duncan and Carlos Santana that they got something to shoot for.
Anybody reach those last year before the markers were up there?
No, not at all. No one hit that brick building on a fly. We had a couple hit the concrete, you know, just beyond the bleachers and bounced off the building, but nobody hit it on the fly.
Any changes to ticket pricing this year?
No, ticket pricing all stays the same. You know, we've promised the fans that we were not going to, you know, raise ticket prices. We're going to hold the line as long as we can, because I think it's very important that the Clippers and our community involvement, you know, we're really the only sport in town that's really family affordable, and so we need to keep the that have made us great. So we still have the Huntington Knothole Kids Club every Wednesday night where kids 12 and under get in free. We still have our Bob Evans Family Days with the Dispatch on Sunday where the entire family gets in for a flat rate of $15. And, of course, we have Dime a Dog Night. Mm-hmm. And now on Tuesday we have Buck a Bone Night. And on Wednesday we have Rooster's 50-cent Wings. I mean, those are the things that create a buzz with the fans and make the ballpark so much fun.
Could you draw fans without those promotions? Because all minor league parks do them. Some of them do more bizarre ones. And I can't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah, I'm not into the bizarre ones.
There's been some crazy. I can't forget last year there were a couple of crazy ones.
Yeah.
You don't smash any cars on the pitcher's mound or anything like that.
No, we don't do anything like that. A little more class in Columbus. And to be honest, the crazier promotions usually happen at the lower classifications. Most of those are at Class A baseball. Triple A baseball, if it's executed right, should be a miniature version of what happens in a major league ballpark. I mean, I think these promotions, when we do them in and around the game themselves. We don't do anything to supersede the game. I think, you know, we always have to maintain the fact that baseball is what we are promoting. And these other things just add an element to them. And we need to have them because, really, baseball, you know, we play such a long season. I mean, the Clippers arrived here on a flight Sunday night after Easter. And when we hit the field tonight, we will play 144 games in the next 152 days. And the major leagues play 162 and 180 days. So, you know, a very intense schedule at both levels.
Speaking with Ken Schnacke, general manager of the Columbus Clippers, opened their season tonight at Huntington Park downtown. I was reading, I think it was in the Dispatch, the snow actually, you guys were like on polar opposites of ski resorts. When there's no snow on the grass, ski resorts, even though they might have artificial snow, don't get as many lift ticket sales. But when there is snow on the ground, your ticket sales were got off to a bit of a slow start.
Yeah, they do. I mean, you know, when you go through the winter we went, you know, people are just trying to get by day to day. And, you know, all the snow we had and, you know, how it slows traffic up and closes schools and delays school. You know, people aren't thinking summertime and baseball at that point in time. So, yeah, as we come out of the winter and we get to the spring, the weather definitely has an impact on what we're doing. Like today, you know, it's dreary and it's cloudy. Right now we're not getting a lot of calls to buy the tickets every morning. We're actually getting calls, are we playing tonight? So, but a couple days ago when it was sunny and nice, people are just flocking to the ballpark and just calling all the time on the phones, which is great. I love to have that buzz of the phones ringing.
How season ticket sales last year were very good. How do they compare this year to last year?
A couple hundred behind. I mean, we're a little over 4,000, 41-something. We're like at about 3,900. And, you know, you just have a little shift in allocation, if you will. We've got some people that will buy at the last minute. We are noticing that we're having more and more people buy the partial plans, which really I like because when they buy fewer tickets in those box seat sections, it means they're going to use them. I mean, I hate to, even though the seat is sold, have it sit empty. I mean, it's very important for the atmosphere around Huntington to have those fans come out and actually be a part of what's going on.
It helps the atmosphere to have them in the seats, but the people who buy the season-long season tickets, even if they don't go, that's revenue for you. Does it? Are you worried about the revenue side there?
No. I mean, you know, they're the anchors that give us the base for our success. And the key is, you know, balancing that with the fact that you need, you know, people in the ballpark. Because people in the ballpark are spending money on souvenirs and food and beverage. They're walking in and around the arena district. They're stopping in the restaurants and the shops down there. So, I mean, it's the activity of the 72 home dates that Huntington Park is to the arena district that has really helped to build up momentum in the whole district.
We're speaking with Ken Schnacki, general manager of the Columbus Clippers. If you'd like to ask a question of Ken, make a comment about Huntington Park, please email us at allsides@wosu.org. Most of the things I heard about the new park were very complimentary last year. One complaint I did hear was the concession prices, beer prices, food prices. Did you hear those same concerns and any changes in the offing there as far as the prices of beer, pop, and hot dogs?
All I know is that I have told Sodexo that I better never go into somewhere else in town entertainment-wise and find the same portions we have for a lower price. So, you know, we're still – I think we're the only sports entity in town that has a 475 16-ounce beer. And, you know, of course, moving to the new ballpark allowed us to add some upper-scale options that people can choose from. But, you know, we still have all the standard baseball fare. The Bob Evans family stands offer smaller portions for families who don't want to spend as much. There's a smaller hot dog out there. There's a smaller soft drink. Kids can have milk. They can have apple juice. They can have macaroni and cheese. So, you know, we're very conscious of food prices, but, you know, it's part of what you put together. And my goal is just the fact that the food and concession prices at Huntington Park are less than they are at any other entertainment venue in Columbus.
How do they compare to other minor league venues?
Well, I think we're in line with other minor league venues. I mean, our ticket prices and most of our concession prices, I know, are less than Dayton, Akron, and Toledo. And Dayton's Class A baseball and Akron is Double A. And, of course, Toledo is our counterpart in the International League.
Mm-hmm. And you had to adjust them, correct me if I'm wrong, adjust them to help pay for the new ballpark.
Well, actually, we don't adjust prices to pay for anything. We adjust prices to maintain the same profit margin depending on the cost of our raw materials. So if, you know, Pepsi syrup takes a little bump, we assess that and we make a little bump. If the beer prices take a little bump, we do that. You know, if the cost of the hot dogs or the ground beef. But if not, then we hold the line, and we have held the line on as many prices as we possibly can.
You have a new manager this year, Mike.
We have a new manager,
Sarbaugh.
Mike Sarbaugh. Very impressed with him. He reminds me of a young Trey Hillman. I mean, you know, I had not met him, talked to him many times over the winter, was with him for the 3.5-4 days I was out in Goodyear. And his mannerisms, how he interacts with the players, reminds me very much of Trey Hillman when we had him at the Coop in 98 and 99. So feel very good about my first impressions of him. Charlie Nagy, our pitching coach, Lee May Jr., son of the famous Red, our hitting instructor. Mm-hmm. Both guys have great baseball resumes. Been very impressed with how they interact with the players, and we seem to have a great group of young kids. So they're thrilled to be in Columbus. You know, they've been out getting their apartments and getting situated, and they're ready to go.
All right. Thanks very much, Ken Schnacki, general manager of the Columbus Clippers. Good luck this season. We'll see you at the ballpark.
Great. Thank you, Mike.
Thanks for joining us here on All Sides on WOSU, WOSU HD 820 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org. WOSU 820, NPR News.
Support for WOSU today comes from Columbus Threshold Choir, women singing at the bedsides of people who are sick or dying. They use their voices as a vehicle for compassion and comfort. More information is available at thresholdchoir.org.